Everybody, just like the football, we are back. It is episode 19 of the Centre Circle podcast, and the leagues are back. The leagues are back, and football is coming home. And joining me into your ears and radios and our gym, David Nealon.
How's it going? Yeah, I mean, it's just the two of us again. I don't know why we hire these other guys. They just never show up.
Well, to be fair, Chris is like across England from the stuff that he needs to record. Derek is being Derek, and Gaz is doing teaching stuff, so yep, we're the only ones with jobs that let us do this right now. Yep, and Big Zlatan has secured Manchester United's first, and in my opinion, the first of multiple trophy of the season. Do you think that Zlatan was that kind of final piece of the puzzle for United, or do you think it's just that one improvement among many?
Well, not quite. I didn't see the match yesterday, but I did get glimpses, and I heard a lot of it on the radio, just to kind of get an idea of how everything was fitting about. But what I could tell was Ibra is one of those strikers who seems to show up at decisive moments of the game. He remained relatively absent for the 80 minutes, and then he scores. I don't think he should have even got that goal. I think he was a very fortuitous goal to get. I mean, Wes Morgan should get that all day long, but Ibrahimovic towers over him, slots away the header into the bottom corner, and wins us the match. And I'm hoping he will be the person who can deliver those decisive moments late on into the game.
See, I kind of disagree with you on that. I saw the second half, and I was actually quite impressed with Ibrahimovic. It felt like there was some gel still to go in. Like, there was times where he was looking for a ball in a certain area and it just wasn't delivered to that area, you know, teething problems. But his movement, you know, everything that you want for a big final striker was there. It was just a case of getting
in the right positions, yeah.
He was in the right positions. Timing was maybe off. Like, he was looking for an early ball at times where the winger was wanting to beat a man, you know, stuff like that. But I will say, I really do think Zlatan is the kind of decisive striker Manchester United needed. And it's hilarious because online, he's got this reputation of being an absolute choke artist. But he's really just been in teams that were choke artists. Like, especially when he was at PSG, he was always under fire for never showing up in the big games. But when have you ever seen PSG show up when it really counts against tough opposition?
I think it's a little bit harsh on PSG. I thought he pretty much was the decisive factor in the PSG's team.
Yeah, he was the only one. Whenever it was a big game, the other 10 shots didn't turn up.
Well, I mean, the standard of the French league is kind of overhyped in a way, just because of PSG being the dominant force. But I mean, going back to United, I thought there were a lot more players who shone like beacons on the day, and I thought the presence of Luke Shaw back in the team was a thrill to see, back to full fitness. And that's the kind of player we need. It's someone who has lots of energy, loves to exploit that left flank. He has a lot of pace. He adapts to get involved in as many phases of play as possible. And that's something that a lot of our left-sided defenders just cannot do, like Daley Blind, Marcus Rojo. They cannot come up to that level. I think Shaw is definitely that person to do so.
See, I was really surprised with how well he did come back. I was expecting maybe the start of the season that he'd kind of be a bit more tentative and struggle, and then halfway through the season he'd find his stride again. But glad to say that I'm wrong about that. He's came back, and it's always good to see someone come back for such a, I want to say horrid, but it sounds like theatrical.
Well, it was a nasty injury, but I think that was kind of the downfall of United's season. I mean, the Champions League fell through, the league had fell through, well, that it never really got started, but there was obviously a presence missing, and that was the attacking intent from the back line. And I think that Shaw really fills in that role brilliantly as a wing back or a complete wing back. He has so much pace to burn. He's got the intelligence of a young defender who knows where to place the ball and, you know, set up great chances. And he is the person who likes to get involved, whereas players like Rojo and Daley Blind, they just don't have that kind of speed to, you know, make the move into those wide areas and take in those pockets of space in which you can exploit. But like, I mean, there are other players that did shine on the day, like Jesse Lingard, absolutely superb goal from him. Dances around four or five defenders. That's what something I like to see at United. Someone who's young, unpredictable, comes through the academy and has a role to play at United. Him and Rashford have been the stars to shine from that youth academy, and I'm really excited at the prospect of Lingard being recognised by Mourinho, getting ahead of Mkhitaryan into the team, and showing what he's made of, and he certainly has. You know, he's the explosive winger who can actually make plays when they can. He was absolutely brilliant.
It was. He was my man of the match for the game, actually, from what I've seen of it. But you know what surprised me? Mourinho selected Fellaini.
Well, I mean, where do I start with Fellaini?
He's the Effie Ambrose of Manchester United, I think.
I mean, I would go as far as saying that, yeah, but he's one of those hit-and-miss players. He's inconsistent. The back pass he was laughable, horrible back pass. Like, he can turn up sometimes, but he just doesn't seem to turn up every single game, and that's something you need at United. You can't play, you know, one good game and five. You need to be consistent. You have to be playing at the top of your game at every single moment, and I think that Fellaini is kind of nearing the end of his United career. I think Pogba will fit into that place where Fellaini is playing. I think he will blow him out of the water. I think that Fellaini, he's a liability to the United team. I'm not really sure why he's been selected, but pretty much what Mourinho is looking for, I guess.
See, here's the thing. When I see Fellaini sitting in that team, I don't understand what he's meant to do. Like, God's sake, we were talking about Schweinsteiger. Would you keep him? Would you not keep him? If you want a physical presence, you want that physical presence to be calm as well, and that's what I think Schweinsteiger would bring. I would have Schweinsteiger 10 out of 10 before Fellaini. Fellaini is a stick-em-on in the last 10 minutes when you're down by one goal.
Yeah. He's kind of a loose cannon who likes to get stuck in, but he doesn't know the limits and the boundaries of, you know, how hard he's tackling players. And I mean, there's just silly, cynical challenges he makes sometimes, but sometimes he has moments of brilliance, but other times he's just worthless. Absolutely worthless.
I don't know if I want Pogba to do well at United or if I want him to do terribly, and that's bad for me. I don't think he'll do bad. I think he'll be mediocre in ways that's worse.
It's living up to the hype of the price tag. I think that Pogba he'll have a good season. I mean, it might take a while to adapt and become a United player again, but he'll have a good season. He won't have a season where he will be the player of the season. He's going to be one of those players who has a role to play in the 11, has a good game, but doesn't play better than four or five others, if you get me.
Yeah. Squaddy.
Yeah, pretty much. He's a squad player, but he's not one to outshine the team.
To continue talking about England, because England's had the most interesting stuff happen this week, besides a terrible penalty up north, you know. There's not been much really exciting happening up in Scotland. Elsewhere in the Championship, we had some shock results with Newcastle and Villa both suffering defeat. And the question that you put to me is, does that make the Championship one of the most difficult leagues to get out of? Now yes and no.
Well, you can define yes and no. How do you mean?
It's technically easy to get out of in that you've got the playoffs there and an automatic promotion place, so it's not like only one will survive kind of thing. Like, you've got a way that you can have a okay season and still have that last gasp chance, but at the same time, there's a lot of teams that can beat a lot of teams that can beat a lot of teams. Like, it's very unpredictable.
Yeah. I think it's
so that your fate can be...
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
your fate can be decided out of your own hands, or one draw might cost you at the end of the season. You don't know. Dropping 2 points or dropping 3 points is, in some ways, a hell of a lot more dangerous here than it is in the Barclays Premier League, because you never know when Derby County are just going to go on a five-game winning streak.
Well, that's it. I mean, there are about 15 teams in the running for the championship. I mean, you start off well, but down the line, you're going to have that blip. And those teams have that blip. It's the team who can manage to deal with the pressure the most. This league requires at least 80 points to get promoted, and at any level, that is quite hard to achieve in 46 matches. It's quite difficult. And I mean, it's whoever's going to want the hunger and desire to get out of this league is going to be the decisive factor. I mean, we saw it with Burnley, you saw it with Middlesbrough, Brighton. They were all teams who were pushing for that title at the end, and then eventually only two of them had to come out of it, and Burnley and Middlesbrough were those two, and Brighton had to succumb to the defeat in the playoffs. So it's a very harsh league in a way, but I wouldn't go as far as saying those results are shock results for Newcastle and Villa. I think it's just a sign of the times. You lose your momentum when you're dumped out of the Premier League, you're going back into the Championship, and you think this is going to be a dull, and you have to compete with these teams who show real hunger and desire, whereas teams like Newcastle and Villa think it's already in the bag. Their fans think this is going to be our season. We're dropped down from the Premier League. We have the Premier League experience. Our stature alone should get us into the Premier League again. And it's far from it. I see the Championship as sort of a graveyard league, whereas some teams who were once in the Premier League struggle for season after season after season. I mean, look at some of the teams who have dropped into the Championship. Blackburn Rovers, they were in Europe a number of seasons ago. They've been in the Championship for 4 years. Leeds, they were another big European giant, and they were quite good in the Premier League. They've been in the Championship or below for 12 years. Ipswich, 14 years, and Nottingham Forest, 17 years in the Championship. It is a very difficult league to get out of. Even if you have a manager who has European experience like Di Matteo or Benitez, that's not going to get you out of the Championship. You need to play a higher tempo game. You have to play with hunger and desire to get out of the league. Otherwise, you're going to be left behind. And that's why I think Villa are going to be wasters in that division for 4 or 5 seasons. At minimum.
See, I feel like the Championship is just one of those leagues that nobody's going to be able to predict it ever. It's a unique beast, and I'm honestly happy that it exists. It's something that, for neutral fans, somebody who doesn't back any horse, is one of the most entertaining leagues.
I agree. I think it could even be more exciting than the Premier League to an extent.
I don't even think that's in doubt, if from a neutral point of view. But if you back a horse, obviously, then the Premiership's going to be better for like you, for talking sake, because you back United. I don't back anyone in the Premiership, I just want good football. So the Championship would be more exciting for me, I'd say.
It's good for the neutrals, but again, going back to the factor of Newcastle, I mean, you're spending £40 million. You have some top-notch players. You have Matt Ritchie coming from Bournemouth. You have Dwight Gayle. Well, I wouldn't call him a top-notch player, but he's somebody with Premier League experience. You know, other players, you have Matt Sells coming in from Ghent, Kieran Clark. You have some decent players who can shine in the Championship, but overall, it's just not looking good for them. I can see them struggling for a few games. It'll take a while to get the momentum back, but I still would account for them to get promoted. It might not even be automatic. It may be through the playoffs.
To kind of tie this in, though, is something else that I noticed. I was at the Rangers-Hamilton game Saturday for work, and two players in particular were absolutely found out for me, and that was Joey Barton and Nico Kranjai. The two of them, whole game, looked like they were Ronaldinho in his prime playing against an amateur team in their heads. They thought they could just walk through this team, could put in 10% and still absolutely dominate, and they got found out terribly by Hamilton Academical. And it's hilarious that somehow Joey Barton managed to get man of the match. We're not going to talk about that. We're not going to talk about the horrific refereeing in every single game, actually, in Scotland.
I think we're just not going to talk about Scottish football in general.
I'm just going to say, tying it back to the championship thing, any team that goes in with an ego, thinking that this game is guaranteed or this league is guaranteed, that I don't need to try, is going to get humbled and get humbled hard. Like, Nico Kranjar looked embarrassed at Ibrox when he walked off the park. That's the kind of thing that Newcastle can expect if they don't turn on their football head and realise we're in for a scrap here.
Well, that's it. I mean, you can't really move to a team and you're going to be guaranteed European football within two or three seasons without actually trying to qualify for it. And that's what I think players like Barton and Kranjar feel that Rangers, based on their reputation, are going to be able to do within two or three years. But they have to play the game and they have to win the league to do that. Well, they're not going to win the league, but actually, you know, challenge. And you have to get through these bogey sides like Hamilton, Ross County, you know, Kilmarnock, any of those sides to do so. You cannot rely to stroll through the league without actually playing these games.
I'm still very confident in my prediction of fourth place. That's where I feel Rangers will finish.
I was predicting top three, but not too sure at the moment.
It's just from front finishing point of view and a midfield point of view, they look pretty damn weak except from out wide. The only place I was impressed was with Waghorn and Tavernier, and all it's going to take is a decent left mid, and Tavernier's going to get caught too far forward time and time again. And I'm just looking forward to see Patrick Roberts go up against Tavernier.
I think Roberts has done quite well at Celtic.
Yeah, it's, I think he's out for 3 weeks, 2 weeks.
He's an exciting prospect.
Yes, yeah, it's a shame that he's not our player though. That's what annoys me though. I enjoy watching him play, but all I see is temporary investment as opposed to, you know, a Celtic player.
Yeah.
But to get into the actual meat of the show, we have our man of the match, and you've got a rather famous name.
Famous name? I hardly think so. He's been at Dudelange for his entire career. Patrick Tejera is my man of the match. And it's a funny story because he was actually on the transfer list when I was first at the club. So I kind of opted not to play him for the first season. But at the start of the second season, he managed to work his way into the team because our other right winger, he's a right winger. And our other right winger, Abreu, picked up an injury. So we had to field Tejera, and he actually performed the role to a T, being that right winger. Explosive on that wing, a lot of acceleration and pace, and he's been getting in the goals as well. 5 goals in 12 appearances, 4 assists, 4 man of the matches, and a 7.68 average rating. So it's fair to say that label of being transfer listed has been wiped clear. So yeah, he's my man of the match.
A bit unsurprisingly, my man of match is Christian Pavon, because he finally made sure that I can play my Celtic save again by grabbing a goal against Manchester United in the fucking most frustrating game I've ever played in my life. Because goddamn, I deserve that. I was only going for a 1-0 loss, so I'm quite happy that I got a better result than I did originally this time, because I went 1-0 up and they pegged me back to 1 each. You know.
Yeah, he seems to be developing nicely.
Yeah, I actually ended up playing him as a striker that game. Played him as a, was it a false nine or a deep line? It was one of the two. Ended up playing him and Harry Chapman up front and going for like a 3-5-2. Very defensive 3-5-2 with counter, but very direct. And it could have been 4-1 honestly. There was a number of one-on-ones that De Gea just would not let go in.
What is it about one-on-ones in Football Manager? They just don't seem to work. One-on-ones seem to be the hardest thing to score in FM. And I mean, it's not even just in the lower leagues. It's in the just in any league, really. One-on-ones seem to be the Achilles heel of any striker in FM this year.
It seems like you have to train them for place their shots. Because if either
place their shots around the keeper, it's surely not a composure factor. It has to be something else that the keepers are doing that they can anticipate.
See, the
how
thing
to
is,
stop these one-on-ones.
The thing is about round the keeper, I've found in this FM, is by the time he's rounded the keeper, a defender's there to slide in and usually concede a penalty, but still not a goal, you know?
Yeah, I kind of feel the keepers are OP this year.
Well,
apart from mine, but...
Yeah, me drawing the Man U game is my headliner, so I'll let you take yours.
You finally got through that game.
Yeah, that is the most frustrating crash dump I've ever had in Football Manager history. Because it wasn't even that good a result. It's not like I beat them 4-0 at Old Trafford. I lost 1-0 on the night. It was still enough to put me through. And then I actually played 3 games beyond it. Like this Hearts game that I lost, I won that and won the game after that.
I thought that would have been your headliner.
Losing to Hearts?
Well, yeah, you made it very dramatic.
Fucking that goalkeeper, man. Matt Ingram. Sign him and ruin what's left of his career.
Especially when you had, what, 40 shots on target?
40 shots on target, 21 clear-cut chances.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I looked at the finishing and all that, and they were good shots. It wasn't even like, oh, they're just like tapping it right at him. No, he was just, like, if it was dice rolling, he wouldn't have rolled below a 5.
Yes, sometimes keepers can bring off blinding performances.
Yeah, I remember first season for me, Schmeichel did it at one point. I can't remember who it was against, but it got me a lot further in the Champions League than I thought I would in first season.
I think my highest ever rating for a keeper was like 9.1 or something.
Yeah, I've had a few 9.3s before, but...
Keepers seem to be a little bit... Sometimes I have good games, sometimes I have abysmal games, which is where my headliner comes into effect. We absolutely threw away what could have possibly been a winning result. Not for the game itself, but for the entire season, because I feel the decline is coming in the games that we've been playing lately. We were playing Swift Hesperange in the league, and we thought, yeah, this team we should kind of stroll through very easy, a routine victory. Go 1-0 up through a brilliant goal from Joel Pedro. Jonathan Zinram makes it 2, and then Tejera makes it 3, and we're 3-0 up at the break. I tell him it's good performance, you know, keep it up. And then the cracks began to show, and Luik Steinmetz, and to be fair, we scored an own goal with 10 minutes to go, and it wasn't his fault, really, he was just unfortunate. But the clearance from the corner, which led to the goal, was absolutely disgraceful. Hit it straight to the player, he whips in a cross, and Ferdon Poor, our left winger, slides the ball into the back of the net to score an OG. And it finished 3-3. I have never been more infuriated by a 3-3 in my entire life. I think that's probably one of my worst collapses on FM16. Outrageous.
See, I usually have the opposite problem where I go behind early stupidly and have to claw back. So
problem with my team is just we just never seem to close the game out.
You're like Celtic last season.
Oh no, but I mean, every single match we play, we get about 20, 25 shots in the first half, and you think we're fine, nothing needs to be said, and then they start slowly crawling back into the game, and they get 2 or 3 lucky shots, and they all go in, and then suddenly our 3-0 lead is gone. It's quite infuriating.
Yeah, that's headliners, a weak analysis. I only managed to play like 3 games. I've not touched a Leverkusen save this week, and the only time I had time to play FM was when I was not well yesterday. I lost to Hearts after finally progressing against Man U, so it's, you know, bang on 50-50, amazing and terrible at the same time. So, yep, I'm turning into Dirk. Not played it this week.
Yeah, he never seems to show up.
To be fair, he did say he might have to take a break for a long time while he was doing that assignment. So
assignment.
That's what he said at the time, I don't know.
I went through a thesis and I still managed to get through this god-awful podcast. Anyways, yeah, my week analysis has been pretty sour, to be fair, after that 3-3 draw, because we started losing matches. I mean, the league is kind of looking pretty bleak. We're 12 points behind Unisesh, who are top of the league. We lost them by 2-1. And we're just having silly draws and silly defeats, and it's kind of hindered our progress in the league. I mean, we were up there within 2 or 3 points, and then blink of an eye, we're now 12 points behind after a few dodgy results. It's not looking good. I mean, Unisesh are quite a strong team in this division. They've only lost once in 14 matches this season, and they've won 12, so we're kind of falling behind a little bit, and yeah, it's not looking great. So I have the second half of the season still to come, so hopefully I can turn it around. And we also got knocked out of the Luxembourg Cup to Petange by 1-0. One of the most fluky goals you'll ever see. Our whipped cross cum shot into the net to make it 1-0, and we had 21 shots on goal. We just can't close games out, and we just cannot take our chances. It's just not been a great week this week for me.
Yeah, it sounds like nobody's had a perfect week on FM. But it's time for your segment, which is totally not because I haven't made it to the next transfer window in any of my saves yet and haven't played enough to get to that. Totally just gave it to you out of the kindness of my heart.
Yeah, we're transfers for me this week. So I'm in 2026, and there's a lot of things that are different in the world of football. I mean, players like Gylfi Sigurdsson going to a non-league Russian club, Terek, on a free transfer. Bear in mind, all of these are free transfers because once you get released from the clubs that you're with, they go to really obscure clubs, and it's really interesting. Wijnaldum has gone to Israel. He's playing for a club called Irony Kiryat Shmona. Stephen Cawker has gone to the United Arab Emirates, playing for a club called Al Ain. Patrick Bamford has gone to Qatar, where he's playing for Al Jaish. Kurt Zuma's gone to AEK Athens on a free again. And Mario Balotelli has ended up in Slovakia, playing for Slovan Bratislava.
Yeah, Balotelli always seems to have weird journeys in FM.
He actually moved to Sassuolo, and then he's now been released onto Slovakia.
Released from Sassuolo.
I mean, if you can't make it at Sassuolo, then obviously something's wrong.
I actually meant to scout Sassuolo in my Celtic save.
They have some good players. And I mean, I'm sad to see players like Sansoni. Sansoni left to Villarreal in real life, and I'm kind of cut up about that. I thought he was one of our better players, but as long as we have Berardi, it's all right.
You've got one more season with Berardi, I think.
I kind of feel it's a ticking time bomb. I think that Berardi will soon leave, probably back to Juventus. But I mean, he's brought us to Europe. We're into the playoffs in the Europa League.
You think he'd go back to Juventus?
Potentially he could. I mean, Juventus have been sniffing around and wondering if he could get him in. I think he's a quality player, and I think Zaza's deal didn't really work out for him, but I feel Berardi has a lot more to offer on that right-hand channel.
See, I feel that De Boer would come in for him.
At Inter Milan?
Inter Milan, yeah. Because I think De Boer's going to have enough money to throw around when he gets into that job.
Yeah. Could be interesting. See what happens.
And to round out this very Spartan show this week, we have our press conference with two journalists this week. We've got Josh Heggie, who's asking a couple of questions, and we have Simon Sarajeko, who's asking a couple of questions. But you can pick whatever one you fancy first, David.
We'll go from top to bottom, I guess. Best signing so far in the transfer window?
I actually think Ibra.
I mean, you have to think hypothetically. I mean, I haven't seen many of these players play.
Actually, Dembele, he's gave this new dimension to Celtic that not only do we have Griffiths, we're actually having a fucking strike partner at Celtic has just changed the team so ridiculously. We're actually able to pressure a back line now. Even though Dyer talked a big game about wanting to be a pressing team, you can't do that with one striker. Just can't. And now that we've got two strikers, both of which can reliably finish and will both actually compete for a ball and are linking up already pretty well, I don't want to say linchpin, but he's been the one that's kind of sparked the change in Celtic, I feel.
Yeah, not by me.
If you're talking impact relative to team's size, I'd say Dembele, but if you're talking just quality of player, I think Ibra.
I'm not too sure, to be honest. I think Ibra is quite a good signing for United, but I don't think he's actually the best one. I mean, there are two signings which I kind of hold highly, and that's Kante going to Chelsea. Looking at Leicester's performance yesterday against United, there was something definitely missing, and that was the presence of Kante covering every length of grass on the field. I mean, I think he'll have a great impact at Chelsea under Conte, and I think potentially Chelsea could come on challenge for the title again this season because of him. And Granit Xhaka, I think, is a great signing for Arsenal, but he's not the signing that Arsenal need. However, he has that physical presence of a ball-winning midfielder who can... Well, I mean, he can play as a ball-winner, he can play as a box-to-box. He's one of those utility men who I think will give a good impact to him. I think it's solidifying the midfield, basically, for Arsenal, but... Again, they need a striker, and they just can't see that at the moment. It must be infuriating being an Arsenal fan.
Being an Arsenal fan is always suffering. But on other news, what do you think about Roberto Mantinez, brother of Roberto Martinez. Anyway, Roberto Martinez at the Belgium job, do you think he deserves it? Yeah.
I don't know how he got the job. I rate him highly as a manager, but Belgium is a huge step up. You're dealing with probably the most exciting team in Europe, with a lot of exciting talent being bred through the team. And I don't know, is Martinez going to take them to the next level?
I think you need experience and a manager to counteract all the youth that's going on in that team.
The only player he's really worked with in that Belgium team is Lukaku.
And? I think what you need is someone who is a hammerhead. You don't need a passionate manager or a screamer or a shouter or even particularly tactical manager. You need someone who can calm them down and focus them. And I think Martinez will do that well.
To be honest, I think Martinez is a bit out of his depth at Belgium. Honestly, think he could have suited championship level. Belgium is a huge step up and they're big boots to fill. Obviously not with Wilmots, but... You're looking at Belgium as being one of the most exciting prospects that UEFA has seen for a while. And I mean, you have some excellent players coming through the academies. You have probably the golden generation of Belgian players. You have to make the most of that. And I'm not sure Martinez will get the best out of those players.
Here's the question, though. How much longer do the golden generation have before they become like England and just...
I think it's going to fizzle out very soon.
That's what I'm saying, they've got
one more.
I mean,
it usually comes in waves, and I think players like Hazard and Lukaku, they're not going to come along very often. So they need to make the most of it and try and get as far as they can in the World Cup and in the European Championships. Otherwise, it's just going to fizzle out in the end.
I think you've got one more shot at a tournament, and if you don't get anything out of that generation's just going to drop off.
And I think that's where Martinez is going to completely fall off. I think he won't get past one European Championship or one World Cup, for that matter. Well, that's pretty much my opinion on it.
Simon is asking us something that we are absolutely experts on. He's asking, who do we tip for the A-League? Because in our expert opinion, we can predict the A-League accurately down to how many points.
I mean, the only team I've ever managed in the A-League are Western Sydney Wanderers, so that's pretty much who I'm going for.
In a similar vein, I'm going to go with the team I managed, and that's Melbourne Victory. See, I think what Melbourne Victory have is that legacy over all the other teams. They've got success in their blood.
I feel you only chose them because Emil Heskey played for them.
No, I didn't. I actually just randomly picked. I didn't know he played for them. Did he?
I think he did. Was it Melbourne Victory that he played?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure he did.
They've actually got one player I like, though. I don't know if he's still there, but Daniel De Silva. He was a youngster when I was managing him. I tell a lie.
He played for Newcastle Jets, not Melbourne Victory.
Let me check if he's still there. Apparently he's an offer as well, but no, he's moved to Holland, actually. Daniel De Silva, and he is now playing for Roda JC Kerkrade.
Nice.
He's 3 years younger than me. That makes me sad. Anyway.
All footballers are getting younger these days.
And continuing on his vein of asking us about Oceanic affairs, Simon also asks, in Australia, the broadcast rights to the English Premier League were bought by a mobile phone and internet provider. This means there will be no coverage at all on the traditional subscription satellite TV service. Are you concerned this could happen? I'm surprised FIFA didn't step in, or UEFA, or even bloody...
Well, I mean, FIFA don't really have the power overthrow a league
even
system.
The FA, I mean, sorry.
Well, it's not even the FA, it's the actual company who owns the rights to that league. I mean, you know, have the Barclays Premier League. I don't really think they're going to be taken over, but I certainly see a transition happening, and that's going from, you know, Sky to BT Sport.
I was surprised that they didn't, I think it'd be the FA personally, but I'm surprised the FA didn't come in and voice their opinion that they want all markets. Like, it makes sense for them to have someone to provide to internet as well as TV, but just cancelling TV seems absolutely stupid.
I don't really know, to be honest. I mean, it comes down to licensing over in the Australia.
And there's probably different laws and...
Yeah. Honestly, I see... The only big change I see in the Barclays Premier League is the coverage flipping onto BT Sport, who are just... You can see they're just sucking Sky dry and just taking all of these, you know, FA Cup, they're taking the Champions League, they're taking the... they're taking hundreds of different games from Sky, and it's kind of wondering if Sky are going to last much longer before BT Sport are now going to completely take over. And I'm not really sure what's going to happen with them.
At the end of the day, limiting your audience is stupid. And, that would be a bad move. But I guess that's where we're going to wrap it up here. Because I have to go sleep again.
As usual. Because all Scottish people do is hibernate for the week.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'll wake you up next week.
Yeah, I hibernate until I'm called out of sleep to either podcast or report on football. That's what I do. I have a big chrysalis behind me.
It's good to know.
I thought that was an okay joke and obscure reference, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Debatable.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. You can catch us on Twitter at Center Circle Pod, underscore pod.
It's just Center Circle Pod, just one word.
You can get me at Darren_Carrigan or ScottishWolf at hotmail.co.uk. You can find us on SoundCloud at Centre Circle.
And yep. Also on iTunes, downloaded as a podcast. Otherwise, how would you be listening to it?
I believe that's Centre Circle Podcast on iTunes.
Just search Centre Circle Podcast and it will be the first search result.
And David, your plugs?
My only plug is basically my Facebook page, facebook.com/dbsc16, and also my blog on Sorted Out SI by searching Climbing Jacob's Ladder.
I still love that. Anyway.
It's a good title, I think.
It is a really good name, but thank you all for joining us. We're hopefully everyone's personal life start to line up. It's just with new jobs, training, and changes to where people are living.
Yeah,
and
we're
stuff.
we're actually getting lives now.
Yeah, it's just things aren't lining up. I'm lucky in that no midweek football's on Monday, so I can always make it here unless my health acts up. And yeah, you never know. Soon we might end up recording on a different day or something like that, if that's an option. But again, thank you for sticking with us. Next week is episode 20, and we should hopefully have a bit more of a full house for that. And we may do something special for it, we may not. It depends how this week goes for me. That's everything, I think, unless you've got anything else you want to add.
No, I'm happy to get back to my boring life.
And we'll see you on episode 20.
Glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming on. I ain't happy, I'm feeling glad. I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on.
Finally, someone let me out of my cage. Now, time for me is nothing, cause I'm counting no A's. Nah, I couldn't be there. Nah, you shouldn't be scared. I'm good at repairs, and I'm under each snare. Intangible, bet you didn't think, so I command you to. Panoramic view, look, I'll make it all manageable. Pick and choose, sit and lose, all you different crews. Chicks and dudes, who you think is really kicking tunes. Picture you getting down in a picture tube, like you lit the fuse. You think it's fictional, mystical, maybe. Spiritual hero who appears in you to clear your view, yeah. When you're too crazy, lifeless. To those, the definition for what life is. Priceless to you because I put you on the hype shit. You like it? Gun smoke, you're righteous with one toke. You're psychic among no possess you with one go.
I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, not for long. The future is coming on. Ain't happy, I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on.
The essence, the basics, without it you make it. Allow me to make this childlike in nature. Rhythm, you have it or you don't, that's a fallacy, I'm in them. Every sprouting tree, every child of peace, every cloud and sea. You see with your eyes and see destruction and demise. Corruption in the skies from this fucking enterprise. Now I'm sucked into your lies through rust, so not as muscles, but percussion to provide for me as a guide. Y'all can see me now cause you don't see with your eye. You perceive with your mind, that's the inner. So I'ma stick around with rust and be a mentor. Bust a few rhymes so motherfuckers remember what the thought is. I brought all this so you could survive when law is lawless.
Right.
Feeling sensations that you thought was dead. No squealing, remember that it's all in your head.
Hey, it happened. I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, not for long. The future is coming on. Hey, I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, not for long. My future is coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. My future is coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. My future is coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. My future.